Welcome to the 5-Star Life Show, your home for content related to education, parenting, and changing wrong mindsets so you can live a 5-star life. I'm your host, Coach Seth. Let's do this. Star Life Show. I'm your host, Coach Seth, and my co-host is out of studio today, but we do have in the house producer Arnold. What's up, producer Arnold?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Good to see you. It's been a while, but yeah.
Hey, so we're going to have a great show today. We have a special guest. Before we introduce our special guest, I want to just remind all of our listening audience that you can actually listen to this show anywhere podcasts are streamed. You can also watch us on our YouTube channel. It's at the 5-Star Life. So at the 5-Star Life YouTube. Again, archives of all of our shows there. Check them out. And if you're really enjoying this, make sure you hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode. And as you're listening to this show, if you like it, just hit the like button if you enjoyed the content. But thanks for tuning in. We're on a mission to change the face of education, of sports, and of culture. And today we're going to actually hear from a guest who we have a partnership with. And we're also going to hear a little bit of his story, so which I'm excited to dive into. So without further ado, I want to introduce to you, and I'm calling it the Kenyan Connection. So Arnold is from Kenya. Shaban is also from Kenya. And Shaban actually works for Gear Up, one of our 5-Star Life partners. Shaban, welcome to 5-Star Life.
Thank you so much, and thank you for hosting me today.
Absolutely. All right, so I want to just start kind of and give us a foundation. We met through Gear Up, and just tell us a little bit about Gear Up.
Okay. First of all, again, for the sake of the audience, I want to say my name's Shaban Varajab. I'm originally from Kenya. I've been in the U.S. since 2014. I came in as a student at the University of Notre Dame to pursue my master's in international peace studies. And then I had a chance to go to Philippines for my internship, where I worked with Catholic Relief Services. I came back, graduated in 2016, and joined Ten Focus before I joined South Bend Schools, where I currently work as the Gear Up Data and Accounting Manager. And a little bit about Gear Up. Gear Up is a federal-funded program that seeks to prepare students for college and career. And it has a number of layers. One, we are providing academic support, and that includes, you know, assisting students with homework, making sure that they access tutoring services, and then just tracking their performance to make sure that they succeed. And two, we have college readiness, and that comes with creating opportunities for these kids to visit colleges and see what is it that is required to get in. If you want to go for 2 years or 4 years, what does that admission process look like? Student life, how does it look like? If you have issues with finance, what are the options out there for you to pursue your dreams? And then we have career readiness, where we are taking kids and connecting them with community industries, businesses, for them to see the number of options that are out there for those who don't want to pursue college. There are different lines or pathways that they can pursue. And then the last piece, which is very important, is the mentorship piece. We are interested in the socio-emotional learning piece of these students to show them that irrespective of the challenges you're going through, it could be family, it could be peer pressure, it could be your own ambitions that you're trying to dream and want to achieve so fast, there's a piece of resilience that you need to build to get you across the bridge. Yeah, that's what we do as Gear Up.
Got it. Well said.
And maybe in terms of numbers, we're working currently with the Rising Grade 9 and Rising Grade 10. The number is actually around 2,300 students.
So rising 9th and 10th graders.
Yes, and we are super excited to walk them through high school and 1 year into college. I can't wait to see some of these kids come out, mm-hmm. graduating, joining different careers, but to me, I want to see them go to college and succeed in their life, come back into the community and be change agents to make, you know, their communities succeed.
Love it. Yeah. And there's such a need. And when you think about, you talked about those different tiers from, you know, college readiness, college awareness, and then, you know, career awareness, career readiness, and then mentorship, you know, without those relationships, without somebody helping them, you know, we kind of find ourselves as a nation as a community in a place where, because there's been a void of that, kids are slipping through the cracks in higher numbers than ever before.
Yeah.
And so the Gear Up grant that was written is to actually bring extra resources so we can put more emphasis on that. Is that correct?
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
So, and that's how that's how we came to kind of work together through Gear Up and Five Star Life Partnership.
Yeah. And I totally agree with you, said that these kids need that support. They need adults present in their life to tell them, listen, we were once teenagers and we had all kind of peer pressure and challenges that we went through, but we can hold your hand and navigate your life until you succeed. And the role that Five Star plays is so timely and perfect. Partnership that we're establishing in this community is meant to make us achieve that dream, like help these kids get the support and mentorship to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a good point. I'm glad you brought that up. Normally I talk about Five Star and I, you know, obviously people know me as Coach Seth and I'm always talking about Five Star, but from your honest viewpoint and perspective, why is Five Star Life important in the community and important for Gear Up in South Bend Community Schools?
Let me start by saying that any given community problem cannot be solved by one person. You need all stakeholders around the board to discuss what is this that's pressing us and what resources exist in our community to make us achieve the dream that we want to achieve. And this could be nonprofit organization that exist. We work with institution of higher learning and it includes, you know, community colleges and universities. We are working with businesses, especially the South Bend Chambers of Commerce, who has a huge resource of business partners that really support us financially, but even just bringing adults to tell these kids, listen, you can be like us. So for Five Star, you are coming in as a very important piece because of, one, your track record. You've been good at bringing these young people and taking them through a process for them to discover their strength, their weaknesses, but even just working as a team to navigate all kinds of life challenges that they face. Peer pressure is a big deal.
It's huge.
We can only help these kids navigate that through that. And I believe through the experience that you expose these kids to, it's not just for personal growth. There's a way all this experience, and there's a lot of research out there that shows, you know, when you take kids through these resilience processes, it connects well with academic performance. It connects well with those college and career ambitions that they have. And it will not just stop there. When they get outside and start working, you have ethics that you need to show, like attendance, reporting to work on time,
right,
relating with your colleagues at work.
Mm-hmm.
All those skills are built in spaces like Five Star.
Yeah.
So you are a very important partner in this process.
Well, we're glad to be partnered, and we're glad to be serving Michiana and specifically South Bend Schools where you work.
Yeah.
We have just a minute and a half left in this segment, and we'll break. But in the next segment,
yes,
I want to get into. We can take this wherever we want, so we have some flexibility.
Yeah.
But I want to get into your story, and because I know there's people listening, they're thinking, why is an African here when there's so many issues back in Africa? He's here fighting for our kids here. How awesome is that?
Yeah.
But. You know, I know people are waiting to hear your story a little bit, so I want to put a little bookmark there. We'll come back, put a pin in it, we'll come back to it after the next segment.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to turn to our audience, and I just want to say, if you know, If you have a heart for kids and education and culture, do your friends and family a favor right now. Shoot them a text with a link to this show right now and forward it to them. And if you're listening on radio live right now, shoot them a text and tell them to turn into 95.3 MNC so they can pick this up. The other thing I want to ask you to do, if you have been listening to this show, watching on YouTube, and if you have not subscribed, liked, or shared this, it does us a huge favor by you actually doing that, because the algorithms are, they're for the groups that are growing. And so you're helping us gain some steam and getting our message out there. So do that right now. Also, I want to give you a date. April 25th and 26th is our 5-Star Life annual radiothon coming up very soon. Check that out at 5starlife.org.
Did you know that you can bring the values, lessons, and mindsets Coach Seth discusses on the 5-Star Life podcast to your local community? Schools are searching for programs and content that work. Just a simple introduction to your teacher or principal could be a game changer in your community. Inquire at 5starlife.org and someone from our team will be in touch.
Welcome back to the 5-Star Life Show. I'm your host, Coach Seth, and I'm joined in studio with special guest Shaban Verajab from Kenya. And also, I'm not going to leave out producer Arnold is with us, but I kind of teased the audience a little bit. Shaban, talk to me a little bit. Where did you get your passion for kids, for children, for impacting, for education? Where's that come from?
That's a good question, Seth. The way I will respond to this, actually, I think I'll take you back to my childhood and tell you a little bit about my family. I come from a family of four. I have one sister and two brothers, and I'm the youngest. And I never saw my dad. And then number two, I lost all my parents in the year 1997, 1998, respectively. And that was my dad went first, and then my mom died in 1998. I was left in the hands of...
How old were you at that time?
I was actually 12.
12 years old?
Yes, very young.
And your mom and dad are...
Yep, all died. And then I was left in the hands of my grandma.
And how did your parents pass?
So my dad was sick. He died, and then my mom followed right away. She was also sick. In fact, I saw her through the sickness until the last day she counted her last breath. It was really disturbing, because this is the person that I knew. She was there, a single mom, raising a young boy. You know, I had never seen my siblings until the time my dad died. That's when I met my three other siblings. But it's life.
Dad wasn't in the picture. Your mom raised you.
Yeah, my siblings were never in the picture.
Your siblings weren't in the picture.
Until...
You watch your mom die.
Yes.
And she dies. And then your dad dies, who's not in the picture. And then all of a sudden, your siblings come in the picture.
Yeah. So it's actually death that brought us back together. But it's just phases of life, you know. It takes different direction.
Okay. So, and you're probably going here, but so if you have no mom, you have no dad.
Yeah.
Where do you go from there?
So I want to say I was blessed to have a wonderful maternal grandma. When my mom came home with me, I think I was very young, but then somewhere 1 week or maybe a month, I can't recall, but because of domestic violence, my mom had to leave, and she left with me, went back to her mom, and that's where I grew up. She had to leave, go to one of the cities to, you know, find life, you know, and most of the time I was left in the hands of my grandma. And then when she died, I had nowhere else to go but stay with my grandma.
Yeah.
And back to my statement, I feel very lucky to have had her, because she...
I'm sorry, say it again. You feel like
very lucky to have had my
very
grandma.
Very lucky to have had your grandmother.
Yeah, because she was that pillar that held me together. Without her, it would have been tough. She had never been to school, like my parents, they had never been to school.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I know for sure, she was a community servant. She worked as, how do you call them, midwives, helping women to mm-hmm. deliver babies. But she also involved herself in women groups. And I think that exposure connected her to the outside world. Like, there's a way education can transform people's lives. So she saw other families succeed when they took their kids to school. And that, you know, that knowledge, that experience made her emphasize the need to take most of us to school.
Mm.
Both her kids. I know I have two uncles who've gone through college. One is currently a high school teacher teaching geography and math. And then I have one who is actually doing his PhD. He was a teacher for almost 30 years and now retired, now doing his PhD. And those are the role models that I feel like were around me and just encouraged me to,
sure,
you know, pursue education.
Mm.
But I want to say that the role my grandma played was very important, like encouraging me to stay in school irrespective of the challenges that we had. And that includes lack of food sometimes. You come back home and there's no light. You come back home, you have no exercise book to write in, you know.
Let's help me visualize. Give me a visual of what it's like in Kenya,
mm-hmm.
As a 12-year-old. And can you give us a visual of, like, how does education work there?
Okay. I know there are a lot of changes right now because of the external pressure. And when I say external pressure, you have governments like the US, Germany, UK that have come in to
sure.
push policymakers to make, you know, education a right for everyone, mm-hmm. you know. And they have pushed the government to invest and make it free.
Sure.
But walking you back to my times, education was a burden because you had to pay for it.
So
primary school, high school, and
the whole thing yeah. you had to pay.
So if you came from a family that didn't have the resources, it meant you had to stay out of school. And if I'm just to give you my case, I remember when my parents died, my grandma didn't have money to pay for my grade 7 and 8. It's my primary school teachers who contributed money to see me through those two grades. And when I was to join high school, I was actually invited or admitted in one of the provincial schools. I couldn't go into that school because there was no money to pay that fee. I stayed at home one full term without going to school until my grandma decided to, you know, approach one of the local schools and say, hey, I have a young man at home. He's bright, but there's no money to pay for his tuition. So what she did was to use her tears to pay my tuition fee, but also sell part of the corn that she had harvested and one of the trees in the compound in exchange for my tuition fee. And that's how I started school. And
so
I remember
she sold corn that she had harvested,
yes.
and planted and harvested.
Exactly.
And she sold part of a tree,
yes.
that was used for fire,
yes.
for heat.
Yeah. So you sell that in exchange. She carried the bags, took to school, told the school administration that I'll give you this tree in exchange for this kid's education. And that's what opened that classroom door for me. So I got in. I remember sitting for my continuous assessment test, and I became second last. The reason for that, I had not been in school for almost 5 months.
Sure.
But the second continuous assessment test, I was number 3.
So you went in and you were the bottom of the class.
Yes, that's what I mean.
And what was going through your mind at that point?
Well, it was tough because you have students who are, you know, competitive and
yeah.
they've been part of the system. They have covered a lot in the curriculum. They know what's happening and you're there blank. But one thing about me, I think I was just self-driven, determined. And one thing I did was to look for friends who came from good families.
Mm-hmm.
And I borrowed their textbooks. I was very close to teachers. I embraced the guiding and counseling department in school. I had my grandma who kept on, you know, telling me, Shaban, don't worry about being at the bottom. If you work hard, you'll be there. And then I told you about my uncles who've been through education.
Sure.
They were there just giving me the encouragement, like,
yeah.
okay, you can make it.
Yeah.
yeah.
But did the thoughts ever come in your mind, like, you know what, I just don't have what it takes. I don't have the resources. I don't have the capacity. Maybe I'm out of my league. Did that ever come to your mind?
Well, yes, I felt like that. And there are two levels of that. I say that one, you get in a space and you have kids who've covered a lot and you feel like, oh, I can't fit in. But also the burden of coming from a family that is just struggling. Food is a problem.
You have survival.
Survival. Everything is just tough. You come home, there's no light. There are many days I came home running before the sun went down. And it was the sun that gave me the opportunity to do my homework before it got dark for you to go and read.
So but that's
I never gave up.
These are the things that we don't think about when it comes to learning. And it being in Kenya, where nobody here thinks about, man, I need to get home so I can study before the sun goes down.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't have an extra 2-3 hours to get work done.
Yeah. So to your point, I think when I left Kenya and came to this country, I think I really appreciate the opportunity because being here opened my eyes in the sense that I got understanding that it's not just Kenya that has families that really struggle and kids that struggle. But you also have families here that really come from struggling families.
And I want to dive into that in this next segment. We're going to take a quick break and come back after this.
Five Star Life offers year-round programs for kids at our 350-acre training facility that we call Summit. These programs focus on three core components. First, each program includes lessons from our curriculum that targets kids' mindset. Secondly, each program teaches a skill like equine, archery, blacksmithing, basketball, fishing, boating, and many more. Thirdly, our programs connect kids to mentors we call coaches, who are trained to help kids live a five-star life. Go to 5starlife.org to learn more or sign up your kids.
Welcome back to the 5-Star Life Show. We are having just a eye-opening and engaging conversation with our special guest. He works for South Bend Community Schools in the Gear Up program, and his name is Shaban Varajab, and really honored to have you on. Thanks for joining.
Thank you.
Before the break, you were just making a really interesting point. We were just talking about Kenya growing up, the limited amenities, no electricity, running home from school so that you could, because in order to do your schoolwork, you had to have light.
Yeah.
So you're trying to get home fast to get schoolwork done. But then just not having like food insecurity, I mean, surviving where other kids in your class have everything they need and you're worried about is grandma and I, are we going to eat tonight? That's challenging, but you shifted it very quick off of you onto, yeah, but Coach Seth, we actually have, we have some of the same struggles here in America. Yeah. Talk about that.
So again, Gear Up, even before getting to Gear Up, when I came in as a student at Notre Dame, one thing I like about Notre Dame and the community around South Bend is the fact that they give us an opportunity to connect with the community. So one of the projects I did for my class was to try and understand which organizations exist in this community, and one of them is Rotary Club. And that's where I met Beth North, and Beth North led to our connection. And I admire the mission of Rotary. Like, they're just giving back to the community. Amazing, wonderful, selfless individuals who come together. Yes, they have business agenda, but they also care about giving back. That is corporate social responsibility. And doing my class assignment with that group was interesting because I was not just asking, how did you join Rotary Club? But what makes you stay in the club? And every time I interviewed a person, they told me, okay, it's the mission, the fact that we get to connect with the community, we get to dive into neighborhoods that are really struggling with poverty, you know, all kind of social problems that you can ever imagine, including education. And then shifting to Enfocus, I had a chance to work with the Community Foundation of Elkhart County, where we helped the board to come up with a community indicator dashboard that shows the reality of the community they serve, but also ways to best fund and strengthen the capacity of the nonprofit that they support. And then I had a special project where I worked with the Sauben schools, where we were looking at the role technology plays in enhancing education delivery in schools, understanding the fact that kids come from neighborhoods that don't have much. Either they lack the computers or they don't have internet access. Some of them, they struggle with transportation. And all that piece of problems, you can imagine what that means. So that exposure was just one step into what I'm doing today.
Yeah.
I got a better understanding that, okay, we have a huge percentage of these kids who are really struggling. They come from families that can barely put food on their table. You have mothers, in fact, single mothers who have to do three or even more jobs to keep things moving. You have homes that are fatherless, you know, and kids have to deal with all the challenges that come with that, domestic violence and many other problems. And then on top of that, add the effects of COVID-19.
Yeah.
I have witnessed that. And for Gear Up, being on the data side of things, I'm able to see things even better because we look at how many kids are under foster care, how many kids are homeless, how many kids are under free and reduced, you know, feeding program. And all those dynamics made me understand that it's not just Kenya alone. These problems cut across. And the best thing we can do is to bring stakeholders around the table to bring resources and invest in these spaces to change the lives of these kids.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's something that a lot of people are totally unaware of, how we have almost like a third world country within our country. And they're people we pass by all the time. People we, you know, our grocery carts go right by theirs.
Yeah.
You pass them in the mall. It's what we have, and it's the current situation we have. So I want to get back to your story. Mm-hmm. So your grandmother was the pillar.
Yes.
And she sold corn and a tree so that you could get through 7th and 8th grade.
Yes, not 7th or 8th, but high school. Yeah.
So you go through high school,
mm-hmm.
and obviously you went from second to last in your class to one of the top in your class.
Yes.
And then in Kenya, what comes after high school?
So I have to say that success in Kenya, unlike the U.S., is dependent on academic success. Like, when you make it through high school and go to college, definitely you'll succeed. I'm not saying that there are no other options like sports and that, but a very small percentage will go that line and succeed. For you to succeed, you have to go to college and then your life will follow. But I want to walk back a little bit to the role my grandma played in getting me into high school. And then I met a number of people who contributed what they had. Either they led me to a network that opened a door that helped me get a bursary, something like that.
Sure.
So, again, without that support, it's so hard for you to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And past high school, to your question, there's two-year college. You have those that go to tertiary training institutions. And then the university is the highest level. And I thank God for the government. It has a loan program that they give to students, just like the U.S., where you can, you know,
financial aid, and then grants.
You do your course. Mm-hmm. Once you're done, you pay back the money. Yep.
Student loans.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's work-study program.
Yep.
You have scholarships that come from, say, local nonprofit organizations.
Sure.
And a lot more that supports.
So your journey was your own, and so you're going through this process, being educated, and how did you end up in the United States, at Notre Dame?
Now, that's an interesting question, and I have to say that when I joined university, that was my university, I went in to train as a teacher. I wanted to be a math and economics teacher. But while there, I think I embraced clubs and societies. And one of the clubs I joined was United Nations Model. I also joined Peace Units program that exposed me to what is going on outside the world. And through that, I learned a lot about the nonprofit that were working around the community. And then one time in 2010, we had a symposium around the university that was looking into the effect of post-election violence that we had in 2007 in the community and what different stakeholders were doing to respond to those challenges. And the paper that I wrote was looking at the role young people played in rebuilding the country. And I was looking at a comparison of Kenya, Rwanda, and other international, you know, communities that have gone through similar situation. And I remember when I was presenting the paper, there was someone in the audience who saw me and was like, "Hey, Shaban, I like what you talked about. Tell me, what are your dreams? What do you want to do after the university?" And then I told her, "I'm interested in youth empowerment programs. I feel like there's a huge gap. Young people want jobs. They want people who can inspire them to, you know, realize what they want to do. But again, they need a mentorship space to understand that it's not just about them, but they need to stand out as community leaders to respond to the social realities that their communities face." And then she was like, "There's a lady in town. Her name is Celine. You need to meet her." And this lady, lucky enough, she had founded an organization called Rural Women Peace Link that targets women and young people in conflict zones to engage them in peace building initiatives, but also encourage them to participate in governance issues and then create livelihood for them. So I came in as an intern, and then we had an opportunity to have USAID together with Mexico introducing a program called Yes Youth Can, which was after Obama's slogan, "Yes, we can." And this program, the goal was to give young people a voice in local and national reforms, but very important, create livelihood opportunities for them. So we did a lot, including forming youth groups, training youth leaders on how they can map community problems, design action plans, engage stakeholders, fundraise, and just be active in every space that they're in. And through that work, that's how I met some international students who connected me with different opportunities outside the world, including Notre Dame.
Wow.
And that's how.
Very cool. So, yeah. All right, we got to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back with more Shaban after this.
Five Star Life offers year-round programs for kids at our 350-acre training facility that we call Summit. These programs focus on three core components. First, each program includes lessons from our curriculum that targets kids' mindset. Secondly, each program teaches a skill like equine, archery, blacksmithing, basketball, fishing, boating, and many more. Thirdly, our programs connect kids to mentors we call coaches who are trained to help kids live a five-star life. Go to 5starlife.org to learn more or sign up your kids.
Welcome back to the 5-Star Life Show. I'm your host, Coach Seth. We're joined in studio with our special guest, Shaban Farajab. And he has a rich accent. He's from Kenya. He's working for South Bend Community Schools with Gear Up, really incredible grant program that is really having, it's going to have a huge potential to impact and change things here. And we're glad that Five Star Life is working with them. Shaban, you're telling us your story, and you're just getting into talking about how, you know, in war-torn countries, you're a part of youth empowerment.
Yeah.
And just help me understand, America's never, I think probably people in our audience, and I would probably say, it feels like we're at war right now. In some ways, we have our own kind of almost mild civil war that people talk about, and you know, because it's political and religious and race wars and all this stuff, and you know, all these controversies and things. But talk a little bit about the war that you're talking about, and some of the youth empowerment. What types of things were you dealing with, and what kinds of wars were you dealing with?
Okay. Well, so going back to Kenya, and let me say Africa as a whole, we have different dynamics in different places. And for Kenya, I think the wars we've seen or the conflicts we've had, a lot of it have been political. And this traces its roots from the colonial period until we got independence in 1963. And after independence, the conflicts that we've witnessed every election time have been along tribal relationships. I know in this country we talk about racial relationships, but in Kenya it's been around tribal. The roots, again, they come from the colonial period when power was shifted from the colonial regime into the citizens of the country. Kenya has for two tribes, but it happens that one or two tribes have been in control for so many years. They control power, they control opportunities, they control resources. Because of that, the rest of the tribes feel like they've been left out. And for sure, when you come into the country, you know, you'll go one end of the country and you'll see the economy thriving. And then you go to a different region of the country, which has a different tribe that is way down there. Road network, not good. Healthcare, not good. Schools are not in good condition. Imagine all kind of challenges. Reason, politics, or power.
So the ruling class, the one tribe is the ruling class.
Yes.
And so those who are in power give their power to those who are in their tribe.
Yep.
So simplifying it.
Exactly. So in 1992, we had clashes, 1997 as well. And then the time when the country was a little bit peaceful was the year 2000. And so 1997, 2002 was peaceful because we had a different, you know, shift from a president who had ruled for almost 24 years, and now somebody new brought like new energy and new hope, and things were changing. But the year 2007 was the worst. You can't imagine, Seth, what happened. We had elections. Unfortunately, people were not happy with the results. And because of what happened, they decided to go on the streets. You can imagine of a country on fire. If you stepped outside, it was, the soil was smelling blood. Everywhere you go, the soil was smelling blood. Seth, within a short period of time, we had businesses burning. We had people chopping each other's snake, including neighbors that had stayed around each other for so long. But one thing that was common across everything, and there's a lot of research out there supporting this, that those who were at the forefront causing that damage were young people. Those who suffered most, or the victims, were women and young people as well. Reason as to why we have young people participating in this is because lack of opportunity. You have many young people who've gone to school, but they don't get jobs, they can't start businesses. What do? They become easily manipulated by politicians who are ready to give them less than a dollar and tell them, hey, go ban this business, or go barricade this road, or go do this. And gang groups that also exist in the community, all that put together, you see all the craziness that is out there. For the sake of this country, I think it's a whole different case.
Sure.
I know you have different social issues that exist which actually make young people become victims of what is happening. But I think Kenya is just unique. And when you go to neighboring countries like Uganda, it's the same case. South Sudan up to date, and Sudan, they are never at peace because of that.
Sure.
You go to Congo, it's chaotic.
Yeah.
So economics,
mm-hmm.
You have identity, like which tribe, which race, which what
sure
causes all this. And then the fact that power can either be good or bad. And that's why it's just important to bring stakeholders together to have a conversation and say,
sure,
what is it that we need to respond to avoid this?
Mm-hmm.
Because peace is what communities need to thrive. Businesses to thrive, social relationships to thrive. You need that.
Yep. What do you think when you hear kids say, there's just no opportunity in this country for me? How do you handle that? What do you say to them?
I don't want to sound naive, but I think I've been here long enough. And even the outside world, people believe America is a land of opportunity. And I've been here, it's true. There are opportunities. But I also understand that the system, the structure, can complicate access to those opportunities. And it's the same thing at home. Like, are stakeholders coming together to create that bridge for this youth to access that? And that's what Gear Up is trying to do.
Right.
We are making sure that this kid go through school, go to college, but also have this connection with businesses to understand what career options exist out there, what support resources exist for them to pursue their dream. So again, to your question, there are opportunities in this country, but still stakeholders need to come together and create that bridge for you to see that, yeah, mm-hmm. there are possibilities.
Yeah.
You just need to, you know, embrace what is presented to you and navigate those challenges. You'll get there.
And what we talk about in Five Star Life mm-hmm. is the opportunities are abundant and your destiny is in your hand.
Yes.
In this country.
Yeah.
In Kenya, not so much. I mean, to a certain point, yes, but you can go to college, and but if you're not the right tribe or the right connections, you still are going to be very limited.
Yeah.
Here, not the case. So your destiny, it comes down to you in the way you look at yourself.
Exactly.
And your perspective of those opportunities.
Yep. I'm going to disclose something here that people, well, the listeners may not.
We just have a minute to.
Okay. So in Kenya, to your point, it's hard for you to access those opportunities. Sometimes you have to hide your name, not to include your tribal name, because the minute your resume or CV is received, people start by looking at, oh, which tribe is it coming from? If you are from the right tribe, then you get it. If you're not, then people ask me, Shaban, you don't have a middle name. I don't use it, because that can act as a barrier for yep. me to access opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just incredible wisdom. Mm-hmm. And it's an incredible story of triumph, of coming from poverty, of losing both parents, the resilience you have. And so I would love to be a fly on the wall when kids say they've had a really tough experience in America. I'm not doubting that, because pain and suffering and hurt is relative. Right? I mean, how do you measure it? It's a feeling, it's a sense, it's your experience. But there are so many different levels and layers to that that I really want to bring you back on to have